it's Wednesday, the 5th of March, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Hwang Jang-woo. Seoul has dismissed claims made by U.S. President Donald Trump during his speech to Congress that South Korea's tariffs on the U.S. are four times as much in tariffs than vice versa. We'll have more details in news briefing shortly. Coming up for our in-depth, we delve into the debate about assisted dying in South Korea after a recent case of a woman who traveled to Switzerland to end her life made headlines. And then later on Korean Book Club, we'll be looking at sci-fi novel by Bae Myung-hoon about a love story set against the backdrop of an interplanetary war. Let's begin today's Korea 24.
And to my fellow citizens, America is back.
That was the proclamation by U.S. President Donald Trump as he addressed Congress in Washington on Tuesday, 43 days after taking office. In his speech, he slammed South Korea and other trading partners. He claimed that Seoul charges Washington four times as much in tariffs than vice versa, and he hinted at the possibility of reciprocal duties. Let's listen to his speech.
India charges us auto tariffs higher than 100%. China's average tariff on our products is twice what we charge them, and South Korea's average tariff is four times higher. Think of that, four times higher. And we give so much help militarily and in so many other ways to South Korea, but that's what happens. This is happening by friend and foe. April 2nd, reciprocal tariffs kick in.
And whatever KBS World Radio news editor Kui Jin joins us in the studio now to give us the highlights from the 100-minute speech as well as some of our other headlines of the day. Lee Jin, hello.
Hello, Jang-woo.
So Seoul immediately balked at Trump's claims. But first, what were the biggest takeaways from the speech regarding South Korea?
Well, addressing a joint session of Congress on Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump specifically targeted South Korea as one of the countries that treat the U.S. unfairly, in his view. Now, we should note, Trump did not specify where he obtained the tariff figures for South Korea, which is a free trade partner with the U.S., as the American president insinuated that he might charge reciprocal tariffs on South Korean goods. The government in Seoul immediately responded, estimating current tariff levels on U.S. exports to South Korea at some 0.79%.
So then where can Trump be getting those figures from then?
Well, South Korea charges WTO member countries' most favored nation tariffs of 13.4%. That's four times higher than the U.S. 3.3%. The rate, however, does not apply to bilateral trade between South Korea and the U.S. Trump also announced he plans to abolish the Chips and Science Act, a bipartisan law passed in 2022 that allocates over $52 billion U.S. dollars in subsidies to semiconductor production facilities, which has benefited South Korean chip fabs located in America. And while forging ahead with his protectionist policies, during his speech, Trump also revealed his plans to launch energy projects with South Korea and Japan. This is what he had to say.
My administration is also working on a gigantic natural gas pipeline in Alaska, among the largest in the world, where Japan, South Korea, and other nations want to be our partner with investments of trillions of dollars each. There's never been anything like that one. It will be truly spectacular. It's all set to go. The permitting is gotten.
Led by the state government of Alaska, the project aims to build a 1,300-kilometer pipeline to deliver liquefied natural gas from Prudhoe Bay to the port of Nikiski. And sources say South Korea was previously not interested in joining the project, but is reconsidering it to reduce tariff pressures from Washington.
Okay, let's turn our focus back home now. The government has announced plans to create a 50 trillion won fund, the equivalent of about 34.3 billion US dollars, to support advanced industries such as semiconductors, rechargeable batteries, and artificial intelligence. Can you tell us more?
Well, the government announced the plan Wednesday during a meeting of economy-related ministers chaired by acting President Choi Sang-mok. The government plans to create the new fund under the Korea Industrial Bank and provide more than 100 trillion won for high-tech industries in cooperation with other commercial banks. The plan is part of efforts to bolster the country's competitiveness in advanced industries amid increased uncertainties since the launch of the new Trump administration. The industries eligible for support include semiconductors, rechargeable batteries, displays, biotechnology, defense, vaccines, hydrogen and AI.
Meanwhile, the nation's gross national income per capita increased by about 1% from a year earlier to around $36,600 in 2024. Can you break down the figures for us?
Well, according to the Bank of Korea, on Wednesday, the country's per capita GNI reached $36,624 last year, up 1.2% from a year earlier. The figure, which peaked at $37,898 in 2021, stayed in the range of $36,000 in 2023 and 2024. In terms of the South Korean won, the GNI climbed 5.7% year-on-year to a record high of 49.95 million won amid the strong dollar and the weak won. The country's gross domestic product increased 2% last year, matching the central bank's earlier estimate in January.
Moving on, South Korea's election watchdog issued a public apology regarding irregularities in its hiring of the children of high-level officials found during a state inspection. Can you elaborate?
In a press release on Tuesday, the National Election Commission said although it is exempt from inspection by the Board of Audit and Inspection in accordance with a constitutional court hearing, such exemption does not apply to inspections by other entities like Parliament. The NEC said it intends to actively participate if the National Assembly were to begin discussion on measures such as inspecting the watchdog. The NEC pledged to put in all-out efforts to eradicate irregularities, including the formation of a temporary committee led by figures from the outside. The watchdog also promised prompt and stern action against 32 of its current and former employees found to be involved in the hiring irregularities.
Next in news related to North Korea, a South Korean lawmaker said Wednesday that around 3,500 North Korean soldiers are receiving local adaptation training at five locations in Russia's Far East, raising the possibility of a third deployment in the war with Ukraine. What do you know?
Well, Representative Yu Yong-won of the ruling People Power Party, who recently visited Ukraine, made the announcement in a press briefing citing defense intelligence of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine. According to Yu, the second deployment consisted of around 1,500 North Korean soldiers, adding they have already completed local adaptation training and have been deployed to the battlefield. The ruling party lawmaker also said there are approximately 400 North Korean deaths and 3,600 injured, with around 300 of the injured soldiers being redeployed to the front lines after treatment. The combined Russian and North Korean force is reported to be around 63,000 in the Kursk region. Representative Yu explained that while there are units solely organized by North Korean troops, Russian military officers give orders and instructions during combat with the Russian military in charge of all military supplies.
In other news, the government has decided to introduce a new top-tier visa to attract highly paid overseas talent. Can you give us the details?
Well, according to the Finance Ministry, Acting President Choi Sang-mok convened a meeting on Wednesday of the government's Committee on Foreigners Policy and discussed ways to improve the visa system, including the introduction of the top-tier visa. The envisioned visa is for foreigners with master's or doctoral degrees from the world's top 100 universities or at least 8 years of work experience, including 3 or more years at a company that ranks among the world's top 500. Foreigners hired to work at high-tech companies in South Korea at annual salaries of at least 140 million won or some $96,000 will also be eligible. After 3 years, top-tier visa holders will be eligible to apply for permanent residency.
That's all for our news briefing today. Hee Jin, thank you for those updates.
Thank you.
South Korea has begun grappling with difficult questions about end-of-life choices as caregiver homicide cases have been rising and more families struggle to care for terminally ill loved ones. While there is no legal framework for assisted dying in South Korea currently, public interest in the issue is growing. A recent case of a woman who traveled to Switzerland to end her life has reignited debate over whether individuals should have the right to choose when and how they should die, particularly those suffering from terminal illnesses. But concerns remain about the ethical implications, potential for abuse, and how such laws would be implemented. To explore this issue for Issue in Focus this week, we have joining us now our regular contributor, AFP reporter Shin Kyu-suk, who recently spoke with the daughter of Cho Sun-bok, the woman who chose to end her life in Switzerland. And later we'll be joined by a representative from a leading international advocacy group on this issue as well. First, Mr. Shin, let's bring you in. Hello, it's great to have you with us again.
It's great to be here.
So can we start with the basics? What is assisted dying exactly? It's also called physician-assisted suicide as well, right?
Right. Yeah. Assisted dying refers to this medical practice where a terminally ill or suffering individual chooses to end their life with the assistance of a healthcare professional. This typically involves prescribing or administering life-ending medication under certain strict legal and ethical guidelines. So the key difference from just, suicide, even if the individual is, in severe incurable conditions, is that assisted dying is medically supervised, right? Mm. And whereas suicide is typically an independent act, not really requiring medical authorization or assistance. Mm. So assisted dying here, what we're talking about, is legal in some jurisdictions in some countries under specific regulations, whereas suicide is generally a personal act, right, without medical oversight.
Right, and so there have been several stories in recent years that have made headlines here in Korea, which has fueled this debate over assisted dying, as I mentioned at the start. Can you tell us about this case of the elderly man who was sentenced for killing his terminally ill wife, and also the increase in cases of caregiver homicides in Korea?
Yeah, this case involves a 84-year-old Korean man who was sentenced to 3 years in prison ultimately for killing his wife, who had advanced Alzheimer's. He had been caring for her alone since 2020, but as her condition worsened, he struggled without any support. So overwhelmed by these circumstances, he attempted a murder-suicide, first poisoning her and then strangling her when it failed. He later tried to take his own life, but was unsuccessful. So this case reflects this rising trend of caregiver homicides. It's we've seen such cases before, where elderly caregivers, typically elderly, facing severe stress and lack of support, resort to these tragic actions. And experts call for better elder care and mental health resources, really, to prevent such incidents.
Right. It's a tragic and distressing scenario. And in the background to these stories, there appears to be growing public support for assisted dying in South Korea, right? What do the statistics, public opinion, and surveys show?
Yeah, statistics show this rise in caregiver homicides, as I've mentioned, where overwhelmed family members, often elderly, killed their terminally ill loved ones due to the burdens that come with caregiving and the lack of support. So at the same time, there was, according to surveys, 82% of South Korean adults support the legalization of physician-assisted dying, with many believing in the right to end the suffering and avoid unnecessary medical treatment. So additionally, 91.9% would opt to discontinue life-sustaining treatment if personally ill, citing conditions, concerns about quality of life burdening their families. So these links suggest, a crisis in end-of-life care in Korea. And many caregivers without institutional support faced these desperation. So You know, legally assisted dying offers a humane alternative to these peaceful people in these cases, it's, as these statistics suggest.
Tell us about the case we started with, the case of the South Korean woman traveling to Switzerland to end her life.
Yeah, so this this case happened in August 2023. This woman, Cho Sun-bok, so she was suffering from metastatic cancer. She traveled to Switzerland to end her life through assisted suicide at the Dignitas Clinic, which is quite well known for these services. So her daughter, author Nam Yu-ak, went with her and documented this journey in her essay collection, I Wish Today Were Tomorrow, and she shed light on the emotional and procedural challenges they faced throughout this process.
Right, and you interviewed the daughter about her late mother, right?
Right.
Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, she spoke about sort of the why her mother chose to go through with this assisted dying process because, you know, of the physical pain she was experiencing, and she had thought about suicide often, and she thought this would be a better and more humane alternative for her. So that's what she talked about, that and how the family responded to this decision.
Right.
So how the family went through it and what they experienced at the end.
I believe we have a clip where you asked her how she was able to accept her late mother's decision and how she felt after her mother's death. Let's listen to it now.
처음에 이제 되게 아이러니한데요. 오히려 안도하는 기분이 들었어요. 왜냐하면
At first, this is very ironic, but I felt relieved because I was terrified that she might actually go and take her life on her own. For assisted dying, you have to travel all the way to a foreign country, Switzerland. But it was a relief to know we could say goodbye to mom and watch her last moments, and that she could choose to end her pain. For my mom, she was more afraid of how long the pain will last than death itself.
이 통증이 언제까지 계속될지 모른다는 거였거든요. 엄마는 흔들리지 않았고 저랑 아빠가 동행했는데
My mother's decision did not waver. My father and I accompanied her on her journey and saw just how much she suffered. So we did not dare oppose it. My father said that for him to ask her not to leave us, she should have at least one body part that didn't hurt. But the cancer had spread not only to her intestines, lungs, and bones, but her eyes too. And she was also suffering the side effects of chemotherapy. Her pain was unspeakable.
부작용까지 겹치다 보니까 그 통증이 말로 다 할 수가 없었어요.
Author Nam also expressed how she felt a sense of relief that her mother was able to depart life in the way that she wanted, that she was selected, and that she was, in her last moments, very, very, very calm, in a very calm state. And she and her father were able to be with her in her last moments before the police arrived for her last autopsy.
Now, before their trip to Switzerland, Cho and her daughter discussed her choice with the Korea Association of Right to Die, an association affiliated with the World Federation of Right to Die Societies. And now we have joining us on the line Anne Bunning, the Secretary of the World Federation and Vice President of Voluntary Assisted Dying South Australia. She joins us now on the line to tell us more about the global situation when it comes to assisted dying. Ms. Bunning, hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes, lovely to be here.
Can you first explain to us, in your own words, what is the right to die and why you believe people should have the right to choose assisted dying?
Yes, the right to die is about a person who is experiencing unbearable suffering and then allowing them the right to request medical assistance to die. So the suffering can be caused by an illness or medical condition, or in some cases, quite rarely, a person who feels they no longer have any quality of life. But the majority of countries where assisted dying is now a legal choice, they need to meet a lot of criteria and they've got a terminal illness and their death is imminent. The majority of people have cancer. 70 to 80% around the world of people who use assisted dying have cancer.
There are arguments against assisted dying, of course, such as concerns that it may diminish a society's value for life or force the vulnerable to end their life early, or that there may be cases like people with dementia who may not be able to make clear decisions for themselves. What would you say about those arguments?
Assisted dying is based on a legal framework. So there are a lot of rules. The law states, in all of the jurisdictions, the law states the conditions under which you can use, you have the right to request assisted dying. So as part of the law, they also make sure that there's a lot of data kept, there's a lot of oversight, there's a lot of people looking at what's happening. And there is no evidence of people being coerced, of the vulnerable being at risk. And every jurisdiction has an oversight board who investigate every death. So I know in every Australian jurisdiction, like the 6 states and 2 territories, one territory still doesn't have it, but all the rest do, those boards look into every case. And you have to get a permit and make sure all the boxes have been ticked and every form has been filled out correctly and every question has been asked and every doctor who's had to assess you has confirmed everything. So it's, and you have to request it yourself. You can't have somebody else request it on your behalf.
Countries have legalised assisted dying. You mentioned Canada. How many countries are there? Okay. And what has the outcome been like? What has the response been like?
13 countries and what we would say are 23 jurisdictions, because the United States, for example, it's state legislation, as it is in Australia. But because, except for 300,000 people in the Northern Territory, we've all passed legislation. So I just say Australia is one. But in the United States, there are 10 states and the District of Columbia have passed it, which is 75 million people. So 1 in 5 people in the United States. Then the countries, the 13 countries, there's Australia and New Zealand, of course, Spain, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Belgium, Canada, Colombia, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Portugal, and then, of course, the USA with 75 million. The European model tends to be a bit different from Canada, the United States, and Australia, New Zealand. The European model tends to be with a doctor control, whereas assisted dying in Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand is about a person having the control and you choose either self-administration or right. physician administration. So there's a difference in the model.
And have these programs in these countries been deemed as successful, if we can define it as successful?
Yeah. Well, the one thing about assisted dying is there's lots of reports and they use a lot of anecdotal stories. They have a lot of data. There's so much data on this, you can find out everything that's happening. And then there's also stories. And what the families report is that it was so peaceful that we were able to be there and the person just passed away peacefully. The doctors report that this is the most amazing area of medicine that they've ever worked in. It's a different relationship with the patient because it usually goes over time and you're talking about managing their death and the person is in control, not the doctor, but the person is in control. So they find it very rewarding. The grief process afterwards is, from all reports, less extreme because it's planned, it's managed, and the person dies peacefully. So it's between, in Australia generally, it's about 1% of deaths. Canada, it's 4% of deaths. Netherlands, about 4%. So it ranges between 1% and 4% of deaths.
Okay, so there are precedents to look at for South Korea if it does want to look at how to implement such policies. But there are still a lot of concerns and hurdles that remain. We don't have a lot of time, but finally, very briefly, what advice would you like to give to countries like South Korea, where there appears to be public support for assisted dying, but legal frameworks are not yet in place? How should Korea start to go about making such moves?
You've got over 80% support, as I gather, in one poll. And that's what we've had. We've had 80, 85% support in Australia for assisted dying, yet we could not get legislation passed. It just would not happen. What we had to do was go and talk to every single MP. So either you go for trying to get a law through, or if you can use the courts, as Canada did, but they had a Charter of Human Rights, which they used. And the courts told the government, you must do this or we will just authorise it. Mainly you've got to get MPs to support it and go with those who support it and develop a strategy, work out what you're going to do for each MP to get them on side and answer their questions.
Well, and I guess, as you mentioned earlier, safeguards, plenty of safeguards to reassure people that the system, there's no risk of abuse or any malpractice.
There's no evidence anywhere in the world of abuse and malpractice because of the intense oversight.
Well, Ms. Bunning, we'll have to leave it there, but we appreciate your time today. We've been speaking to Anne Bunning from the World Federation of Right to Die Societies. Thank you for speaking to us today.
My pleasure.
Right, so we heard there about the global situation, countries which have legalised assisted dying and the lessons that we can perhaps take away from them. But Mr. Shim, what about the situation in South Korea currently? We should stress that, of course, assisted dying is not legal here in Korea at the moment. What are some of the main arguments that are being put forth against legalizing assisted dying here?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the primary concerns is the potential erosion of the sanctity of life, the principle that's rooted in many religions. So critics here argue that legalizing assisted dying could lead to sort of a societal shift where the value of life is diminished, especially for the vulnerable and elderly. And I guess there's a slippery slope argument to be made here that suggesting that permitting assisted dying in specific cases might gradually expand to less stringent circumstances, which could cause unintended, unethical outcomes. And there's also impact on the doctor-patient relationship. Introducing assisted dying could place physicians in ethically challenging positions, potentially conflicting with their duty to preserve life. And critics also suggest that before considering assisted dying, there should be a focus on improving palliative care to ensure that terminally ill patients receive comprehensive support to manage pain and quality of life.
Right, particularly the ethical concerns, they're not easily measurable, of course. But as we said, there seems to be strong public support for assisted dying in Korea. So then, how far is Korea from actually adopting such policies? What are some of the legal decisions that have to be made now or are to be made on assisted death in Korea that we should keep an eye out for looking ahead as well?
Yeah, I mean, so far there have been several, legal developments concerning assisted dying that are underway. First is there was a legislative proposal for assisted dying in 2024. Representative Van Gubeck of the Democratic Party introduced the Assisted Dying with Dignity Act, which aims to permit assisted dying for patients with no hope of recovery. And so the idea here is to create a committee under the health ministry to assess eligibility, and physicians assisting here would be exempt from criminal liability in aiding suicide in these cases. But there's also a constitutional court underway in the case of one 63-year-old who suffering from acute myelitis, who filed a petition in 2023 challenging the laws criminalizing assisted suicide. So The court accepted the petition in January last year, marking the first time it will review the constitutionality of prohibiting an individual's voluntary choice to end their own life. So this has to, we have to wait until such a decision comes out and before there's, I guess, laws put out to make this viable.
Right, so the conversation and there are steps being taken, initial steps, we should say, but still seems there's a long way to go, right?
Right.
Well, this, of course, is a deeply complex and personal issue. There is a lot to reflect on, ethical issue as well, we should say. And I do feel the conversation around assisted dying is starting really in South Korea. So we'll continue to see how that debate develops. We'll leave it there. We've been speaking to Shin Kyu-suk from AFP. Thank you once again for walking us through this sensitive topic today. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 29.21 points, or 1.16% Wednesday, to close at 2,558.13. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ gained 9.05 points, or 1.23%, to close at 746.95. You can check for Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
It's time now for Korea Trending, our daily segment, where we round up some of the most viewed stories and issues on Korean news outlets outside of our news briefing headlines. And to bring us those stories, we have with us in the studio now Daniel Che, our KBS World Radio news editor. Daniel, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, Jang-woo.
What do you have for us first?
Sanitation workers jumped into action to help find a huge sum of money that was accidentally discarded into a major waste facility.
Yes, this is a heartwarming story of people going above and beyond to help others. And this was a significant amount of money as well. And more significantly, it was money that was to be used for surgery, right?
That's right. A mother in her 60s frantically sought help from the Sejong City sanitation workers after belatedly realizing that she had accidentally discarded a bag containing around 26 million won, or nearly $18,000, to be used for her son's surgery into the garbage disposal unit. But by the time the call was made, the money bag along with 24 tons of garbage were poured and piled up at the trash collection container. It would seem like there's zero chance of finding the cash in that huge stack. But the officials decided to roll up their sleeves and dive in to find the needle in a haystack upon learning what the money was for.
Yes, it's quite a decision to make to dive into this search with no guarantee of how long it could take or if it would produce results.
Right. First of all, a Sejong City official made a big save by making the call to prevent the 24-ton container from being dumped to join an even bigger stash, which would have made the search practically impossible. The selfless sanitation workers began by spreading the contents of the container far and wide because the garbage disposal system used in Sejong immediately used pressure and crushed the content upon disposal. The package was torn up and the content mixed into this huge pile. Undaunted, the officials spent more than 8 hours straight searching and piecing the fragments at times. And by the end, they managed to retrieve more than 18 million won, or over $12,000. What was deeply moving was how the mother tried to express gratitude by providing financial rewards, but the officials kindly refused it and instead expressed disappointment at not being able to find the full amount.
Well, that was very noble of them, and hopefully the surgery is successful and that her son recovers well. Let's move on to our second story. Youth unemployment continues to be a major concern for the nation, and local governments, it appears, are taking up more measures to try and tackle this issue.
Right. One key strategy is bridging the gap between young job seekers and local businesses. For example, Busan has allocated 75.2 billion won, or about $5.15 million, to enhance career support, including job adaptability workshops and professional growth programs. Several other cities are offering subsidies to cover interview and exam fees. Some regions go the extra mile, providing free suit rentals for interviews, all with the goal of easing the financial burden and better equip young job seekers, no matter their type of job.
Speaking of, it seems that there's a growing concern about the number of ultra-short-term jobs in Korea. How is that affecting youth employment?
Well, increasing instability in the job market is highlighted by the surge in ultra-short-term workers, particularly concerning for young people who are seeking stable, long-term employment. This is even affecting young graduates with advanced degrees. Nearly 50% of doctorate holders under 30 still unemployed. In response, local governments like Gwangju actively working to improve job opportunities there. Since 2017, Gwangju has been connecting job seekers with employers, and now they're expanding the program to include up to 300 companies. The city also increased job-seeking allowance to 3 million won for those meeting specific criteria, a much-needed financial boost.
Okay, let's move on to our next story, which is about autonomous vehicles. South Korea has expanded the trial operations of self-driving freight trucks, now allowing them to operate on all highways nationwide. This could pave the way for long-haul autonomous logistics services in the future, then.
Indeed. The Ministry of Land, Infrastructure and Transport announced it has extended the designated pilot zones for autonomous freight trucks. Previously, the program was limited to just four sections of the Gyeongbu Expressway, totaling around 332 kilometers. Now, it will cover all 44 highway routes across the country that covers some 5,224 kilometers.
That's quite the expansion. What prompted this move?
So the initial pilot program showed expanding the testing area would better accommodate the needs of traffic and logistics. The autonomous driving industry requested this expansion to ensure the program could adapt to more diverse conditions across the country. Unlike regular city roads, highways provide a more predictable environment for autonomous trucks, a more suitable testing ground for scaling up autonomous freight, as there are continuous traffic flows and fewer obstacles like pedestrians or traffic signals. To address safety concerns, the ministry is also setting up an interagency framework to ensure a quick response in case of any accidents involving self-driving trucks.
And finally, public toilets on Seoul's Han River are set for an upgrade. They are open to new ideas for the facilities as well, the authorities. Can you tell us more?
Yes, the Seoul Metropolitan Government places a great emphasis on this project, as they firmly believe that public restrooms are key facilities that reflect the city's cultural standards, that well-designed restrooms can enhance the city's overall dignity. First, they seek to establish a standardized design to unify the different public toilet structures currently in place, to design clean, safe, and easily accessible public restrooms, establish a management system with a user survey. They accepted applications for contract services to develop new designs for 101 portable restrooms along the elevated areas by the riverbanks.
Right, and we don't have to look too far for an example of such initiatives producing positive results. Japan's Tokyo Toilet Project, for instance.
Yes, the project was launched ahead of the 2020 Olympic Games. They invited 16 artists, architects, and designers to renovate 17 public lavatories in Shibuya to firmly change the stereotype of public restrooms back then. One of the most striking designs featured transparent glass walls that turned opaque when occupied. The innovative design gained widespread attention and were prominently featured in the Oscar-nominated film Perfect Days. And the movie was known by some reviewers as a great promo for these innovative toilet designs as well. Back in Seoul, along with public toilets, vendors and shoe repair stands in the city will also undergo redesign. A first in 16 years, they want brighter colors and more modern appearance. Over the next 3 years, some 1,100 street stands and shoe repair stands will be replaced with a new design upon request.
That's all for today's edition of Korea Trending. Daniel, thank you for those stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've now come to Korea Book Club, our weekly segment where we dive into the world of Korean literature and books, exploring works either in Korean or in English translations. And for that, we have joining us on the line now writer and former university lecturer John A. Reilly and author of the forthcoming book, The Strickland Continuum. John, hello, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me back, Chang Ho.
Okay, so what do you have for us this week?
So this week's book is The Proposal by Bae Myung-hoon, and that's been translated into English by Stella Kim and was originally published as Cheonghon.
Okay, so what can you tell us about this author first?
So this is a science fiction novel. And in fact, Bae is one of the most popular science fiction authors in South Korea today. He was born in Busan in 1978. And his first novel, The Tower, came out back in 2009. And The Tower and his more recent novel, Launch Something, they've both been already translated into English. So this is the third book of his to appear in English translation.
Yes, The Tower was quite a notable work. We reviewed it here on Korea Book Club a few years ago with Barry as well. And as you said, he is known as a science fiction writer, or at least a speculative fiction writer. I specify that because science fiction and speculative fiction are quite broad terms, and Bae is not someone who writes your run-of-the-mill sci-fi or speculative fiction either. So what kind of story are we dealing with here? Can you explain a bit more for us?
Yeah, as you said, those terms like science fiction and speculative fiction, they can encompass all kinds of things, from highly experimental forms of fiction to kind of action-packed space operas that are page-turners. But I think in Bae's works, he's interested in kind of painting a picture of a future society and then filling it with all kinds of little satirical details. So The Proposal is this future society where there's an ongoing war between Earth and some breakaway colonists. And that setup almost sounds like something from an anime like Mobile Suit Gundam or something, but that's really not what this novel is like at all. It's a series of 11 letters from a man who's in this space war, and he's sending them to his girlfriend back on Earth.
Wow, okay. That immediately sets a different tone to the novel indeed. And perhaps this is a broad generalization, but when we think of traditional Western science fiction in its literary form, we, I think, tend to think of it as something idea-driven rather than character-driven. But this setup makes it sound very much more character-driven then.
Yeah, I think this book is kind of both, right? What you said about it being idea-driven, that's true to an extent. I mean, for example, we don't really learn the name of that main character or the woman who all his letters are addressed to. And some of the other characters, the generals running this war, they have these kind of call signs rather than names. So there's General Dinada, meaning from nothing, and then there's General Liddell, who we get told he's named after Liddell Hart, who was a real-life British military historian. We never get their real names. On the one hand, there's this form of letters home during wartime and of this couple who are kind of separated by an incredible distance. So that's giving the book this intimate feel in the midst of all these kind of giant intergalactic events. We get a feeling for this unknown man and how much he loves this woman, but we also get this feeling that he's just a tiny little cog in this massive machinery of space warfare. And we definitely get the feeling that he knows that.
Okay, so can you paint us a bit more of a picture of this futuristic world that Bae has created? What kind of futuristic details does The Proposal contain?
This is a short book, but there are so many of those details that it's actually quite a mind-boggling book. But one of my favourite details is something that they call the Bugler Paradox. And somehow this law of warfare got named after this kind of, I believe, low-ranking engineer who just loved drinking alcohol. And somehow this really famous law got named after him within the fiction of this book. And it has to do with the futuristic weaponry that they use. They say that it takes 30 seconds to identify their enemy's precise location and another 30 seconds for the weapon's Lucifer particles, which are like their lasers, I suppose, to reach their target. But even traveling at what Bae calls the universe's speed limit, there's no guarantee that the enemy ship will be in that precise location. And there's another 30 seconds to work out if your attack has actually been successful, if you've hit your target. So this is all very long-winded explanation, but it gives you some sense of it. And what I love here is that there's this new threshold of technology that is incredible, but it's just brought us this new threshold of frustration that we now have to deal with.
Do you know what? I often feel like that sometimes in our own world today, nowadays as well. For example, I have hundreds of channels that I can access on my TV through my smart cable box. But for some reason, it's really slow to change channels. I kind of miss the old TVs where the remotes respond immediately, or those clicker buttons that the old TV used to have, even if there were less channels back then. Perhaps it's this sort of thing, this frustration, that inspired Per's story. But anyway, so does this paradox play a role in the story then?
Well, yeah, it does, because I think part of it's what you're saying is that satirization of technology, but it's also that thing about scale, right? The enemy force that we're reading about is incredibly far away from the other army. So as a result, we don't really get a sense of this enemy up close. We don't really see what they look like, for example. So it's almost like you're playing kind of like the game Battleships in real life, you know? And I think as well, it would be pretty easy to argue that this is some kind of allegory for the kind of ongoing tension between the two Koreas and the kind of massive division of the DMZ.
Right.
I think it'd be pretty easy to kind of argue that that's what's going on here, but there's also a lot more going on. I wouldn't want to just reduce it to that. So, for example, when the protagonist goes back to Earth, he gets this visceral culture shock from our gravity, something that we just don't even realize we're experiencing, right? But it's totally different to him when he goes back to Earth and experiences gravity. And there's also this distance between the side that we're reading about, right? The starships that are incredibly far from each other to avoid being picked off. And so that means that the comrades don't really know each other well, and the leaderships kind of start to become suspicious of each other because there's this huge kind of distance, both real and kind of like power distance between each other.
I can see how there are these satirical elements, you said, to this space opera. And it sounds like a very compelling work indeed. What are your final thoughts on the proposal? What do you want our listeners to take away from your review?
Well, I absolutely love this book, but like any novel, it's not going to please everybody. I think if you're comfortable with the kind of book where there's a narrator, a very sort of deadpan narrator who's pulling you into this completely different world and presenting it as their everyday reality, then I think you're going to love this book. But I think if you want something that is a bit more kind of character-based, story-based, focusing on dialogue and things like that, then our listeners may find this a little bit obscure. I mean, it's totally different from the last book that I picked for you. And so one thing I would want the listeners to take away is just how diverse Korean literature can be. And also, even though we always say that cliche of don't judge a book by its cover, I'd like to mention that this book has an absolutely gorgeous cover design, designed by Jisoo Choi, and it just looks absolutely beautiful. It's so detailed and fits absolutely perfectly with the content of the book as well.
Right. Actually, she designed all three of Per's books translated into English, The Tower and Launch Something. They all have the same design language as well. They all look similar. So, and they're all published by Honford Star as well. So there's quite a collection of Per's works being built at the moment by Honford Star. And this does sound like a truly fascinating edition. Once again, it's called The Proposal by Per Myung-hoon, translated into English by Stella Kim. And that was our pick for Korea Book Club this week. Right, that's where we'll leave it. John, thank you for that review. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Thanks for having me again.
And that is where we wrap up today's show. Join us again tomorrow for more news, reviews and reviews from Korea. Till then, we hope you have a wonderful day. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-woo, and thank you, as always, for listening. Goodbye.